Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network.
You're listening to the newchurches.com Q&A podcast. New Churches is an online hub for the mission of church multiplication. Here you'll find the resources and training you need to get started, as well as a community of church planting and multi-site experts to help you thrive. My name is Daniel Lim, and I'm here with Ed Stetzer.
Todd Atkins. This is the kind of respect I get. Todd something or other. You know, we both have the D and the last letter of our first name.
It's hard.
So easily confusable.
Well, you know, it's the year 2020, January 2, 2020, and... yeah, just starting the year off with a bang.
Now, did you think? Now, I thought that Jesus would have come back before 2020. Did you ever think that, or is that just me?
Well, I mean, when did Blade Runner?
Blade Runner, dude. I don't watch movies like that. I'm a Christian.
Yes. No, but wasn't there all this news about? It's now past all those initial predictions and
Oh, that's right. Because Blade Runner supposedly took place in 2019. Place in 2019.
Exactly.
If I would have seen the movie, but I don't go to those movies because I'm a Christian.
Yes.
But I wasn't talking about Blade Runner. I was talking about like Jesus coming back. I mean, you do believe in the imminent return of Jesus, right?
Yes.
What year did you become a Christian?
What year did I become a Christian? It was when I was the fifth grade. I was 10. So, okay. 1995.
So you sound a little unsure, because if you're not sure, I can share the gospel with you. If you were to die today, dude. Okay. So you were kind of post a lot of that. So, well, no, maybe there was, you know, 90, was it 88 Reasons Jesus Was Coming Back in 88? I remember that. And then the same guy, Wisnet, he wrote another book called 89 Reasons Jesus Come Back in 89. And at that point, everyone sort of caught on to him that maybe... the book 90 Reasons wasn't a good one to write. But I just kind of think, you know, 2020 seems like it. I don't want to say this because someone's going to take this out of context, but there's like a prophetic significance, even though the calendar is based nothing on the prophetic. It's not like the Jewish calendar, nothing. It just seemed like Jesus would have come back for 2020. So Lord, Maranatha, come soon. And then this podcast won't be going on anymore. And we won't be trying to reach lost people, because the kingdoms of the world will become the kingdoms of our God and our King. But until then, we're going to show and share the love of Jesus to as many people as we can. Well, you didn't expect it to go this direction,
hey,
did you?
Hey, that's great. I mean, preach it. You're a preacher, Ed. So we need to...
And so are you.
Yeah. And it's... just I can't believe it.
Just a Canadian preacher. So as a Canadian preacher, you're a little quieter and you say...
Yeah.
You say, eh?
Eh?
And is that okay? Eh?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, eh?
Yeah.
Oot right. In a boot. Okay.
Oot in a boot. Yes.
All right.
Now we're going to get complaint letters from our Canadian listeners.
No, they can't, because I'm Canadian. So
that's right.
You're married to a Canadian.
And I'm married to a Canadian. That's true. And soon my daughter will be going to school in Canada.
Yeah. And we'll see if Trump is still in. So.
Oh, I didn't. Don't go political. All right. Sorry.
You're the one that brought up Trump.
I didn't say I was using it as a verb.
Yes.
I said that trumps the complaints, but now you can't even mention it. So anyway, moving on. Oh, okay. I have to tell you a funny story now. I apologize. Sure. We got to get to the question. So, but the week before the election at Moody Church, we were singing a song. And what's the song that says, "And the Trump shall resound"? It is well. So we're singing It Is Well. And we get to that place. This is the week before the election, 2016 election. And it says, "And the Trump shall resound." And everyone just looks at each other and is like, "Oh, oops, this was not the song to pick the week." So even if you like Trump or
I don't know.
I can't imagine he did it on purpose. But it was just funny. And but people didn't like, I put it on Facebook and people got mad at me for pointing it out. But it was, I mean, how do you not notice that the week before the election? So anyway, is what it is.
No kidding. That's a hashtag worship fail.
Hashtag. So. I can't say that because I like the worship. Anyway, moving on. So what's our question for today?
Todd? Okay, so today's question is from Jermaine, and here it is. How do you sustain a church planting feel, like risk-taking, innovation, etc., in a church that's 3 to 4 years old, especially if you aren't the original church planter? Hmm.
Okay. Since you said his name, I don't think that's a Jermaine question.
Oh.
Thank you.
You're just full of it today.
Tip your waiter. I'll be here all week.
Is this what 2020 is going to be like?
That's right. Lord, save us. Come back, Lord. Maranatha.
Dad joke / pastor joke. All that is wrapped up together.
That is a pastor joke. Okay. So I do, you know, like we often do here, Daniel, I do question the premise of the question. Mm-hmm. So I think that, now again, let me say, so he talks about like a 3 years. Did he say three specifically? I think so.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Because even in the question in of itself, this is it. It's saying, he's basically saying that the original church planter isn't there anymore,
right,
after 3 to 4 years old as a church.
Yeah.
So something has happened, and I guess he's wanting to get back to that entrepreneurial, risk-taking, innovative feel.
Yeah, and I guess what I would say is it's time to not be that. And I'm not saying, I mean, the risk-taking innovative was great. But I think what often happens is, now again, keep in mind that I have never stayed at a church plant for longer than 5 years. So, but I've stayed at several church plants between 3 to 5 years. So what happens is, and we write about this in Planting Missional Churches, the second edition, unless you took it out because you did most of the work on the second edition. But we write about how there's a sense that you move into maturity. And so if you want to be, and I want you to be an innovative and thoughtful, engaging culture church, but you really can't keep that church planting thing because part of it, you don't want to. People just can't run at that pace. I mean, you're going to wear out people, set up, tear down. You know, people do move towards a greater sense of stability. And I think it's a normal life cycle of a new church that you move from infancy to a greater sense of being, I think, an established. And, you know, this comes like, you know, and it depends on your timeline. But I think in terms of 1 year, then you constitute as a church and you officially create some membership, and then maybe 2 or 3 years in, you move to self-sufficiency. And these are all markers, just like, you know, we used to, at our last house, we used to measure their heights on the door frame. Well, these are like markers. Now we're constituted. Now we have elders. Now we're self-sufficient. And so I would not run away from embracing maturity, but because here's the deal. I mean, you know, just is your church still, I mean, think about Saddleback, or now that's a bad example just because that came to my mind first, but think about any church that's 10 years old. They don't even, and some of the most churches you'd say, well, that's a great example for me. They don't feel like a church plant anymore. They feel like always desiring to be missiologically engaged, innovative community. And I think you can do that. At the same time, you can grow up and put away childish things and grow up into maturity.
Yeah, completely. There's a couple things that I want to add to that. Yeah. On the one hand, a lot of what Ed's talking about here is that idea of organizational life cycles. And there's a lot written on it. And in the cycle of any organization, typically it's organizations are started with more of that entrepreneurial leader. There's that entrepreneurial energy there. Adizes Askinas, I think that's his name. He wrote a great book on life cycles. Predictable Success is another one too by Les, I can't say his last name, but there are several books. So it's a well-known theory about how organizations start. Now, it's, for one thing, obviously on the church planning side, we need to get to self-sustainability. That's a big thing. But you never actually, in every church, you never want to lose that risk-taking, innovative edge. Yeah. But the thing is, as your church gets older, what often ends up happening is if the innovative, that innovative energy, if that was all contained within the person of the church planter, which is often the case, as your church gets older, if you want to keep on growing, that innovative entrepreneurial energy can't just stay within the church planter. It actually has to become a part of the organization, which is a part of building systems. And that's the critical next step that needs to happen within your church. So, I mean, you can hustle, you can get a lot done with a lot of that energy from the get-go because it's so exciting, you want to get things up and going, but that can only last you so long until you can have the systems until you need the systems in order to sustain. So the biggest thing is you need to make sure that there are individuals on the team. And that's why teams are so important in leading a church, where you have teams where individuals, there's one person that's a little bit more organizationally minded or systems minded, another person that is maybe a big picture thinker. How do we impact our city? But you have these people sitting at the table and saying, okay, what, how can we now grow our church? How can we now increase our impact? And also make sure that we're not killing ourselves doing it, which is why the systems are so
right.
important.
And I think systems are, in many ways, that sign of maturity. Now, at some point, you know, these biological metaphors that we're using break down. You know, we're talking about, you know, like you're having a baby, and because the baby's already got a respiratory system and a circulatory system. But to change metaphors, you're going from, you know, a singular celled organism to a multiple celled organism. And those systems are just a part and a mark of maturity. And so what I would say is it's kind of, all right, let me use a metaphor. I love metaphors. Think in terms of a yo-yo. I know you're a little surprised with a yo-yo, but stay with me. So you take a yo-yo.
I've never heard this one before.
Okay, good. This is good. So you take a yo-yo and you put the, you lower the string all the way out and you spin it around in a circle. And you know, your yo-yo is flying around in a circle and there's two forces that are operating. Now, it's not technically 100% true in like scientific physics, but one force is pushing it outward and we call that the centrifugal force. And the other force is pulling it inward. We call that the centripetal force. So the centrifugal force is being created by your hand and the yo-yo itself pushing out because you're spinning it around. And the centripetal force is being exercised by the string. It's holding it, keeping it from flying off into the window or whatever nearby. Now, so here's what happens. At a church plant, there's a lot of centrifugal force. And you're seeing it. And if I had the yo-yo in my hand, I would start with it close. And then it goes further, farther out and farther out and further out. And that's the beauty of the church plan. It's got this centrifugal, outward-focused, reaching people, but it still has the string. Something is enabling that ministry to continue. Somebody's watching the kids. Somebody's setting up the chairs. Now, what happens is, as a church grows, the string gets larger to support the larger and larger mission. Now, what I'm guessing Jermaine would be concerned about is what I've often seen. What happens almost 99% of the time is eventually all the energy of the church goes into the string and it becomes the mission of the church, is maintaining the string. So there's no more centrifugal movement. It's just a big fat string. And what you want to do is you want to not despise the string, and it grows and it's got people eventually doing student ministry, maybe women's ministry and maybe men's ministry and maybe more and more service in the community. So what happens is if you balance it well, the string continues to support the mission. The centrifugal mission, which is the part that has to maintain the established church, is kept and nourished and valued, but not so much that it overcomes the outward focus of the mission. The yo-yo continues to go out and get larger and stronger as the string supports it in doing so. But the problem is too many times we wake up and we say, all we got left is the string. We don't have any mission. All we're doing is focusing on the maintenance of it. Does that help? Does that give a picture at all?
Yeah. Yeah, that's really good. That's really good. And to add to that, I think the important thing to remember, Jermaine, is that you are that you don't expect yourself to be able to lead and handle and operate in all of those functions at the same time. Yeah, because I think sometimes we try to do that and we're like, man, I got to build systems. I'm the church planner. I'm the leader, but I also have to preach and I also have to be innovative and I have to do all these things. And we put so much pressure on ourselves as leaders that really, I mean, it's not fair. It's not fair that this idea of this Superman church planner doesn't exist. And I know obviously there are some church planners that are kind of like that, but that's not an ideal to live up to.
And let me
rather, even if you look at first,
let me add too, that my guess is that there's a little bit, cause I'm friends with most of the people who succeeded me as a church planner. So, and I've kept in touch. So what happens is there's sort of a sense that sometimes the people kind of have this unreasonable view of the church planter And they sort of like, and now you're the established church pastor. And I'm thinking of the person who followed me at the church I planted in Pennsylvania. And he's much more pastorally gifted. He's grown the church to two or three times of what it was when I left. But early on, there was a sense that, you know, are we going to be as entrepreneurial and as try anything, do anything as Ed Stetzer was, the church planner was? And he just had to say, you know, no, this is the next phase of the church's life. And that next phase of the church's life was still innovative, but it became more that established church that kept focusing on good things.
Yeah, that's huge. That's huge. So recognize your gifting compared to the previous pastor's gifting, and also recognize that you don't have to be well-rounded. I love this quote. There's no well-rounded leaders. There's well-rounded teams. Good. Right. So if you can fill your team with gifted individuals in each of these other areas, then you can have that well-rounded team that moves things forward. But don't put all the pressure on yourself to be all things. Yeah. Awesome. Well, thanks again for listening in to the newchurches.com Q&A podcast. If you haven't yet left a question, be sure to do that. We would love to answer your questions. You can send that in by going to newchurches.com on your computer and hitting the sidebar on the right that says send a voicemail. If you're listening on a mobile device, just go to speakpipe.com/newchurches, speakpipe.com/newchurches, hit record, send that in, and we would love to answer your questions. And lastly, make sure to check out the Making Disciples podcast with Robbie Gallaty and Chris Swain as well. They're a part of the Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network family, and they talk a lot about discipleship groups, gaining momentum, and all topics related to making disciples. So just look that up on your favorite podcasting app and subscribe today. We'll catch you next time.